This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 24, A Brush with Fame. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach podcast. Michael and Angie in the house.
Hello. Good morning.
And today our special guest is Mr. Adam Glendon Sidwell. Welcome, Adam.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We're so excited to finally get you here.
Yeah, it's been a minute. We've been trying for a while. You're a busy man.
It took me a while because I was trying to prepare some really good comments.
Okay, good, good. You
know, that's why. I wanted to be ready.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Adam. In between books, Adam Glendon Sidwell uses the power of computers to make monsters, robots, and zombies come to life for blockbuster movies such as Pirates of the Caribbean, King Kong, Pacific Rim, Transformers, and Tron.
And now Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. I just had to...
After spending countless hours in front of a keyboard, meticulously adjusting tentacles, calibrating hydraulics, and brushing monkey fur, he is delighted at the prospect of modifying his creations with the flick of a few deftly placed adjectives. He's been eating food since age 7, so feels very qualified to write the Evertaster series. He once showed a famous movie star where the bathroom was. Adam is also the founder of Future House Publishing, which has published nearly 50 sci-fi, fantasy, and picture books. Adam wrote every single word in the Evertaster series, the picture book Fetch, and the Unfathomable Chum. Welcome, Adam.
Nice to be here. Cool.
This is exciting. This is exciting. Yeah. And I just kicked everything over there. Good, good. Okay, now I'm turned around the right way.
So, showed a famous movie star the bathroom?
I showed a famous movie star where the bathroom was. It was late one night. I was working at Digital Domain, and they were having this big display for all the executives at Disney for Tron.
Okay.
And I was there on a Saturday, and I thought, you know, I'm going to wander around a little bit and see who
so
I
much
can
fun,
see.
Huh?
Oh, it's so fun, because not a lot of people were at work, but I had some deadlines that had to be done. And this gruff-looking man kind of is sauntering through this dark hallway, and he looks like he's got to go. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you looking for the bathroom? He says, oh, yeah. I said, right over there. He said, oh, thank you. And he goes on over there, and he's got this kind of grisly voice, and it was Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah. How cool. Oh,
hey, that's Jeff Bridges.
There you go. Oh.
So we saved him from a terrible accident.
That's good.
Yeah.
So good. My job. Mother, she was an attorney for 20th Century Fox for decades, right? And so my sister and I would go hang out on the set. And
on the lot, yeah.
On the lot. Yeah, we'd go like just... Oh, we had so much fun, but we were on the Love Boat set one day. I mean, you probably don't even know Love Boat.
Of course I know Love Boat. Yeah.
And I don't even know the guy's name, Gavin McLeod. There we go. Captain Stubing. So on this set, they have a drinking fountain. No joke. This is how long ago this was. Nobody has their Sig bottles. Like, it's a drinking fountain. I'm in line. I'm, I don't know, 11, 12, something like that. And Captain Stubing comes along. I'm next. And he just stares me down, cuts in line, and gets a drink. Yeah.
He's thirsty.
Yeah.
Then my mother, one time, she was on the set of Die Hard, and this is my mom, and she's like, with her friend, she's like stumbling around looking for Bruce Willis. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? She trips over all these cables, you know, running through the room. And so this gentleman, barefoot, bald, says, be careful, ma'am. And she's like, where's Bruce Willis?
Yeah. And it was him.
It was him.
She asked Bruce Willis where he was.
Well, no, she tripped looking for him.
Yes.
And then he said, be careful.
Imagine he was going to save her. Probably just been walking on broken glass with those bare feet.
Yeah.
So is that, you've worked on several big movies. Is that your only brush with fame then is showing?
I have surprisingly few brushes with fame.
Well, it's because you are fame. We now have a brush with you.
Yeah.
No, we know Adam. We know Adam.
Okay. Yeah.
We've had some fun times together. We really have.
Yeah.
So Will here. Smith.
Oh, Will Smith. He was in the parking lot, across the way, and he was there talking to somebody else, and I just peeked out the window, and I saw him.
You saw him.
He was there, 100 feet away.
Yeah. I got to see Michael Jordan tee off on a golf course in Park City.
Oh, did you really?
I got to.
How did you do?
It was an amazing shot. It was really cool.
Really?
Yeah, and then he drove by and he waved at me.
I'm always surprised by how the tall ones are so much bigger in real life. And how, like, Jane Fonda, I held a door open for Jane Fonda one time. Tiny woman. She's so small. just like fragile, fragile. Small.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's all our brushes with fame.
Okay, cool.
We're good. so cool. So you've written a few books.
I've written a few books. Five now.
Yeah.
We've got some other things in the works too.
And yeah.
So we're really excited about the next series that's going to be debuting in October, which is a big project we've worked on. I don't even know if we've announced it yet.
This is like just debut.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Wait a
Here's
minute.
A little secret.
Drum roll announcement.
Here's a little secret. So Future House Publishing is partnering with a massively popular tabletop gaming company called Soda Pop Miniatures, who makes something called Super Dungeon Explore. And if you look at these, are these phenomenal fantasy type games that parents play with their kids, and they it's in this fantasy world where there are druids, knights, elves, orcs, and the art is phenomenal. And this game is so popular that every time they launch one on Kickstarter, they raise over $1 million.
Wow.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
And so we're really excited because we are writing a 5-book series to go with the games. I'll be writing, co-writing the first book in the series with Zachary James.
Okay.
And he and I have been working on this book. We're really excited about it. We've been collaborating with all the other authors involved. And so there's this story through line that ties in with the world of the game. And we are going to be actually launching it on Kickstarter because that's where a lot of the fans are.
That's a brand new, like that's in the new economy.
Oh, totally.
It's a wonderful, wonderful place. Yeah. And it's exciting. And we are also going to be having minis that go with it. So miniature figures from the game exclusive that you can't get anywhere else.
Oh, that's very cool.
Except for with this package. So we're really excited about that. And that's
that's
the next project. Was I supposed to mention my previous projects?
Yeah, well, yeah, let's talk about a little bit the Evertaster series. That one's very popular. We've had previous guests on our podcast who mentioned it by name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you have actually been mentioned a few times on other episodes.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, okay. We've talked about you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. Thank you. Well, it's good to finally be here on the show.
Yeah.
The Evertaster series is my, you know, my most popular series, and there are 3 books out in the series so far: Evertaster, The Buttersmith's Gold, and most recently Evertaster: The Delicious City, which is continues the adventures of Guster Johnsonville and his family as they run into many delicious and not so delicious things in the world. You know, the series is kind of like Indiana Jones meets Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Well, you know, I'm a picky eater.
Are you?
I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You might be an Evertaster then.
You might
I am.
Be. You might be. Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm curious where you got that title.
Well, that title was actually suggested to me by my agent, Alyssa Hankin. She's with Trident Media Group. She's great. And I had come up with this concept of an Evertaster in the series, but I was struggling for a title, you know, Guster Johnsonville and the Legendary Taste, you know, that seems to be one of the go-tos for people as they're naming their books, the name of the character, plus and the, which doesn't always work. You know, it worked for Harry Potter, but maybe it doesn't work as much anymore because that's been done. But she said, well, why don't you just call it Evertaster? Like, you know, this boy in the book is an Evertaster. Why don't you just call it that? You call it the Evertaster series. And so I did, and I've been very happy with
it. It's really clever. Sounds,
so. Now, is it considered YA or is it middle grade?
It's middle grade.
It's
definitely middle grade. We're finding a lot of older kids read it, though. We have 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds who, you know, won't stop turning the pages. So that's fun. You know, and that's what's fun about middle grade is there's a certain portion of the population that loves reading it because it's imagination, it's adventure, and we've had a lot of adults pick it up and really enjoy it.
I was just going to say, I'll bet you have adults that love it.
I get some good feedback. In fact, that's most of the reviews on Amazon are from adults because kids hardly ever leave Amazon reviews. So I wish they would.
So one of my favorite pictures from your website is you amongst a million kids, all with red chef's hats on. Talk a little bit about your school assemblies that go along with your book tours and things. How did you come up with that concept?
Oh, certainly. Okay, certainly. So one of the ways that I've been able to connect with an audience is by visiting schools. You know, a school oftentimes will want some writing education or motivation for their kids. And so they'll invite me to come out and talk to the kids about reading and writing and about my story of becoming an author and that process. And so I'll go out and I'll visit a school and I will talk to them about story process, and in a very fun, exciting, you know, 35 minute assembly to 45 minutes, we bring all the kids in the cafeteria, everybody's cheering, they're excited. I talk to them about some of the movies that I've worked on and show them some clips, and they go crazy. They love
that. Oh, but yeah, you're like, wow, a superhero.
I'm watching movies at school. Yeah. You know, this is so cool. But then what I do is I talk to them about how every movie you see on screen there started out as a script. It was written down on a piece of paper somewhere, and that's what books and movies have in common. Mm. And then we break it down, the various story elements that occur, using examples from the films and using examples from other books, we're able to give the kids that aha moment where they say, oh, I understand what rising action is. I understand what a climax is. I understand how dialogue works. And I still get Facebook messages or Instagram messages from kids saying, you came to my school 2-3 years ago, and I've been writing ever since. Mm. And your book was the first book I read, and now I'm reading all the time. One of the greatest moments was when I had a mom come up to me, and she was crying, and she said to me, you came to my school, my son's school last year, and he's autistic, and he has never really been able to get into books. Mm-hmm. You convinced him to read your series. And when he did, he just latched on to all the sensory description of the taste in the book that it opened up a whole new world of reading, and he hasn't stopped reading since. And she was crying to me. Isn't that great? And it felt so good. I said, you know what? This has been worth it. This has been worth it.
Totally.
All the travel, all the jumping on airplanes, going in cars, you know, being away from my family. There's really been a value to it. And so that was a feel good moment.
Mm-hmm. So was that the first three books that you wrote, or did the other ones come in between? You've got a picture book.
Right. I know. Right. So they've been intermittent. So usually I'll write an Evertaster book, write another book, then go back to an Evertaster book, then write another book. So
okay.
That's how it's happened. Let's see. The order is Evertaster and then The Buttersmith's Gold, which is a fun spin-off story in the Evertaster universe, which you have to read. And then I wrote Fetch, which is a picture book about the story of where dogs come from. It's like an epic dog origin story.
I love that. Epic dog origin story. Epic dog origin story.
Epic dog origin story.
I'm just curious how that does like SEO wise.
Let's just,
that's kind of where my brain is right now.
How many people are looking up Googling epic dog origin story?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's that's great. That was a great little description.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, it works because it's basically the story of how dogs find their owners. You know, that dogs come from this place far away where they can do what they want and they live these wild and crazy lives. But eventually some of them want something more and they go beyond the horizon and they discover something wonderful, which is humankind and friends.
Oh, that's great.
Man's best friend.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So
sounds like also it could be like return from midlife crisis.
I think, yeah, definitely. Let's market it to the baby boomers that are going through that right now.
They need to read Fetch. Pick up a copy of Fetch if you're a baby boomer.
It should be in the lobby of every psychiatrist in the country. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. And then comes Chum. Yeah.
Chum was just a funny, quirky, wacky book to write. And I loved writing it. It was a lot of fun. I did this one in a first person perspective and wrote it very much, you know, off the hip, twists and turns, where I indulged my quirky sensibilities. And I think what's been amazing is that kids have really responded to it. There's a certain, it's a story about a boy who really wants to be famous And so he goes on to a reality TV show on board a pirate ship. And once he sets sail, he finds out that if he loses the game, he gets thrown overboard.
Oh, no.
So this is his way to, you know, sort of resolve his unpopularity problem, which maybe just makes it a lot worse. And so, you know, it's very much written in the mind of a 13-year-old who's trying to find his place in the world and figure out who he is. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And it should be fun.
Yeah. You know, if you're not having fun with what you're writing, you gotta write something else.
You gotta do something. You gotta do something so that it is fun.
You gotta make a difference in the world.
I'm not saying you have to stop writing. Don't take that away.
Yeah, no, don't. Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't my intention.
Like, I'm having a moment of disempowerment is why I say that. It's so not fun right now.
Do you want to talk about it, Angie?
Yeah.
Right.
You should read this book.
I'm just thinking I kind of want to write middle grade.
Just go write middle grade. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would think that would make it all better. So, cool.
So, I've actually been to over 350 schools.
Wow.
Since the beginning. I've lost count now.
Yeah.
Go back and look at my notes, but.
So do you get fan mail from?
I get fan mail usually on, I'll get these stacks from the schools where each kid will write me a thank you note, mm-hmm. draw a picture. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so great. You know, if I saved all of them, I would probably fill up a whole room.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to hear that back from the kids.
Hmm.
And they'll say funny things sometimes, either in the fan mail or in the assemblies, like, why do your eyebrows connect in the middle? I have a unibrow for those of you who are listening at home. You can go check out some pictures online.
Yes.
But yeah, I only have one eyebrow and the kids want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's great. I love kids.
They're great. Very, very honest.
Definitely.
If they don't like your book, they'll tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, they will.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you write that? Then they tell you honestly when they like it. And so that's the fun part.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I want our listeners to take away from this is that, you know, this whole school tour, the assembly tour, is to help promote your book. But at the same time, it is also to help teach kids to read, to make a difference in the world.
Yeah, to give back.
And so the selling of the book is secondary to that, right?
That's what's great about it is you're doing something you love and that really makes an impact, but you're also able to spread the word about your stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've run so many writing workshops at the school in the classrooms with the kids where we start writing stories. You get to see their brains click as they learn about story structure and as they learn about what a theme is. And there's just an awesome impact that happens there. And it's a lot of fun. And really, it's helped me to build an audience coming out of the gate as a no-name author who, you know, nobody had read anything from me before. I had to find a way to connect with as many fans as possible. And I think that's a critical part of being an author, whether you're traditionally published or self-published or hybrid published. You've got to go out there and find your fans.
Yeah.
Nobody else is going to do it for
exactly.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can do it in the same way that you can do it.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, you have, you know, you can spend ad money running ads about your book, but a lot of times you're spending $2 to make $1 on a lot of that ads, that ad spend. And so as an author, you have abilities to connect with those fans in ways that really sells books in ways that only you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And your publisher, if you go that route, will be expecting you to get out there and do the legwork.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't get me wrong. When I'm talking about this 350 schools, I missed my family and I was tired and I didn't want to go to another hotel or get another rental car or leave again, yet again, for the airport to fly off to Oregon or down to Arizona and sign in Costco for 3 days straight for 8 hours a day. I was tired.
Yeah.
Well, there's this misconception that, oh, write a book, make a lot of money. That is not how it goes. It is a business. There's a learning curve. You can't skip any of that. It's like,
you can't. You really can't.
Yeah.
You really can't. And, you know, after having founded Future House Publishing and published nearly 50 mm-hmm. titles, we see that the authors who want that lifestyle where they're sitting at home and they feel their book is so good that everybody's going to come out and get it, their books often fail. Mm. And it's the authors who are out there building their email list, getting on podcasts, talking to people mm-hmm. that their books succeed, because you have your publisher, which is doing everything that they can to push your books. Mm-hmm. But if you're not putting in half of that effort so that, you know, those that you're doubling their efforts, then you're not going to find that your books sell very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the key there is to get yourself, your personality out there. And once people get to know you, then they buy your book.
Right.
Not you know, just standing on a street corner trying to hawk, you know, buy my book. We've all got friends like that on Facebook mm-hmm. who every post it is, you know, buy my book or on Twitter or whatever. And that does not work. You have to develop a secondary cause, a secondary message.
It's so much noise that you lose followers that way.
Really? Oh, definitely. You really do. People want to know who you are.
Yeah.
They want to feel like they know you. They want to be able to go to a book signing and say, oh, I've been reading and following you on Twitter. I feel like I know you. Mm-hmm. Whereas you may not know them yet because they haven't tweeted back.
Right.
But they want to have a feeling of, hey, I know the kind of things that you're writing. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about your authentic life.
Right.
And that's what makes it interesting, because it almost feels like you're a friend. I mean, you see Taylor Swift likes to tweet about, oh, I'm just making some chocolate chip cookies with my besties,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. everybody feels like they're her bestie.
That's right.
So Taylor should really write a book if she hasn't already. I'm sure. but what you see is there's that idea in the world that people want to see inside your life.
Yeah, they want
and
a piece of you, but not in a, I'm not saying that like negatively, like, you know, Britney Spears, a piece of me. What I'm saying is,
while we're on pop stars.
Yeah, really. There's the right way. And
no, they want to feel like, you know, we're tribal in nature.
Yes.
They want to belong.
Yes.
And to belong to your tribe. And, you know, I don't know if people are reading less or not. I suspect they are. You know, than they did years ago, right? But definitely the market is saturated now with books, because anybody can, you know, put anything out there. And so, you know, you really got to handle it all. The book's got to be excellent, but you've got to be excellent. Do you know? You are that book. You know, you're the face of that book.
You are the face
of that book. You know, it's not about just the book anymore.
And it's interesting, because even with Future House Publishing, we have an email list where we talk to our readers. And for a year, our email list was written from a generic perspective of some faceless person on the Future House team that we were sending out to people. Mm-hmm. And we find that people didn't respond to that as well as, so we switched it over and said, okay, we're going to have to change this. This email list is now coming from me as the creative director of Future House Publishing. This is coming from Adam. So I'm going to tell them a little bit about my life, and then I'm going to interject the stories that I know about these authors. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about, you know, Michael Darling. I saw him at this con and he was signing here, and here's a picture of Michael Darling. Mm-hmm. He writes the Behind Beyond series. I think he's been on the podcast before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very witty, awesome voice. His books are selling so well. And I think because people feel like they're connecting with him.
He's fabulous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's done it right from the beginning.
He has. In fact, when we first met Michael, I don't know, a year or so ago, a couple of years ago, that was something that Michael, right here, sitting here, Michael said was, in fact, I think you said it to Michael.
Yeah, I know. I totally complimented him on doing it right.
That, and we've used Michael as an example in our writers' conferences of this is how it's done correctly. He's done it all correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he doesn't succeed, ain't nobody going to succeed. That's the way I yeah. put it.
He's going to do it. He's going to yeah. do it. Mike yeah. is so great.
He shows up to speaking events with a cane.
You know, in that English paisley accent.
Jacket. That paisley jacket is wonderful. It's his, yeah. it's his mark.
It's it definitely. Is.
That's the,
and
that's
the hair and the, you know, just everything about him. Plus, he's personable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? I mean, like, he communicates with people that he's met at our writers' conferences when he's been presenting, and it's like I watch them communicating on Facebook. They're all post. He's connecting to human beings.
He's doing so great.
He That's is wonderful. Yeah.
And let me say, by contrast, there are some authors who come across as grumpy, or they come across as curt.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't found a way to talk to these fans. And that even becomes harder for the publisher to sell.
Yep.
Because when we're writing that email and we're talking about that author, if we don't have something to say, or that author's on a panel,
mm-hmm.
Or we're trying to send them to a panel or send them to a signing, and they're saying, oh, well, I don't want to go to the signing, then it can be rather difficult to promote someone like that because there's not that audience connection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. everything that we're pointing to here has a name, and it's called content marketing.
Okay.
And, you know, so content marketing is just that. You're providing content as a way to market yourself. And that is so important. And I want to get that across to all of our listeners that you have to provide content. You can't just show up and expect it to, you know, magically take off. You there has to be some content, you know, whether it's, you know, doing the school assemblies or, you know, just being really great on Instagram. You can do it all from the comfort of your home from writing a blog, but that's content marketing.
Tell people something interesting
mm-hmm.
and yeah. make them want to hear the story about you,
mm-hmm.
which will then segue into the story about your books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah. I've seen a lot of writers that were on a trajectory to really arrive that sabotaged their careers because, you know, that crashed and burned because they didn't manage the persona, you know, the brand that they are as a human being as well
yeah.
as a writer.
Yeah. And even if you're writing under a pseudonym, your pseudonym then becomes a character that you develop as well.
Right.
And, you know, you can post whatever you want, but it has to be interesting. It has to be relatable. It has to be something that your audience will connect with. And then that's what sells your books.
And that's what's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what's fun.
Yeah.
I love interacting with the fun authors who, you know, you get to see them at conferences or cons or see them online. And it's just great stuff.
Well, you do it very well, too. It's like we're all talking about Michael Darling doing well. But I remember the first time I met you at it was Authorpalooza at Barnes & Noble. Oh. And you recognized me from my picture. And I said, I'm Angie Fenimore. And it was just like this big, like, hi, finally, I meet you. And it's like, and I'm like, wow.
Everybody knows Angie Fenimore.
Okay, but then like you were like that with everybody I watched.
Oh.
It wasn't just
well,
me,
thank you, Angie.
Which was good. Well, like, because yeah, I'm looking at like, good. Okay, he's doing this right.
I really enjoy meeting the fans.
And I get that. Like that was, that, yeah, there was so much genuineness, you know, it was fabulous. Yeah, you're just great.
There's something, thank you, because there's something wonderful about, you know, you're sort of in this cave when you're writing.
Yeah.
And then there's this massive, your book's published and it's out there, but there's like this horrible wall that exists between you and the people that read your book because they go to a store somewhere and they buy your book, but you have no idea where that store is. Mm-hmm. You have no idea who they are. You have no idea when somebody orders your book on Amazon, who they are or where they are. And so when you get to meet them finally at a conference or at a signing, that's wonderful because those walls get taken down and you get to see them. You know, I almost wish there was like a tracker, you know, like, I mean, this may sound like you're trying to stalk your readers, but wouldn't it be cool
yeah.
if you knew that like Mr. Johnson over in Connecticut just bought your book and read it. And so now totally. You can say hi and yeah. you're suddenly connected and friends.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be remarkable. Yeah. Another author who does this really well is Cameron Dayton. He writes the Etherwalker series, mm-hmm. the Silicon Covenant series, the first book, Etherwalker. And you'll see Cameron at Comic-Con and Cameron has a very interesting background. He is a creative director for video games, currently creative director on Call of Duty, mm-hmm. The World War II game that's coming out soon. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of buzz lately about it and a lot of press.
We have a house full of gamers.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you can thank Cameron, actually, for the creative direction behind Call of Duty. I mean, that's his baby.
Oh, wow.
And he was previously working on Overwatch, World of Warcraft, Walking Dead games. And so he's got an incredible experience doing these games. And when he sits at a con, it's really fun to see him because he'll see somebody walk by, you know, with a World of Warcraft shirt and say, so what do you play as? Instantly it starts this conversation where they are completely connected because they are gamers together in this same world. Mm-hmm. And they always buy his books and they love his books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his books are selling really well. If you haven't checked out Etherwalker, I highly recommend it. It's one of our top selling books, and go grab a copy. And the cover art is, I just love the cover art. It's incredible. That has been in large part due to Cameron's personality and his ability to connect with readers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Future House's cover art. You guys have this dialed in.
Thank you.
Really?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
There's not a book out there that you guys have put out that I've gone, eh. They're all just like, oh, wow. Yeah.
I appreciate that. It's my pride and joy. I, you know, coming from a visual effects background and being an animator by trade, like visual art is so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to jump into publishing, is because I wanted to make these cool books. Now, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we have misses and we have great hits, but sometimes we have misses. But overall, I'm really happy with the cover art because that is one of your best marketing tools.
Yeah.
And I want to throw that up there for everybody to see, because nobody knows that your book is good yet.
No.
Nobody knows because they haven't read it yet.
We do judge a book by its cover.
We do.
We do.
We do. So yeah. I really enjoy that aspect of it.
So how many of the covers have you personally done? Are you the artist on several
of the
covers?
Usually
not. Okay.
Usually I will art direct some of them, but we've also had, for majority of our covers, I'd say maybe even a majority now, Jeff Harvey was one of our art directors, and he is phenomenal. Really love his work, and he's gone on to illustrate some of his own books that are coming out or have come out, and just a really talented guy. So, but a few of the covers I've done and then art directed myself, back before we had Jeff. The Evertaster cover was one that I art directed. We found a phenomenal artist. His name is Goro Fujita, and he actually does concept art for DreamWorks.
Cool.
And, you know, Madagascar, Megamind, those were some of his babies. And so connecting with him was really wonderful. The Etherwalker cover is done by Ludo Lillaby. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Sorry, Ludo. And he is an artist that does phenomenal Street Fighter comics, World of Warcraft design, and he's actually, you know, hired by Blizzard and some of these other places to do the creative art development.
So we've
been lucky to connect with some really amazing artists.
I'm curious about Kevin Nielsen's cover work on it's the Shirani series. Am I saying that wrong?
Yes. No, I think you're
okay. Good.
I think you've got that right. But
I mean, stunning.
Do you like it?
Yeah. I would hang that on the wall.
Good.
I would hang.
And we have. We actually have big posters of Sans up on the wall. I'm very pleased with that. That was an artist that interned for me on some visual development for. We did some visual development for the Evertaster film. And then I hired him to do some of these cover art, these covers, and he was just awesome.
Yeah, really. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely cover art is very important. And
he's got another one out, Twins.
Yes. Okay.
When did that come out?
That has been out for a few months now. That's a short story.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, okay. It's a short story. And that cover was actually done by Jeff Harvey,
our cover artist. Oh, so different artist.
So we had a different artist. He's able to match the sensibilities.
I can see that.
So we're really happy with that.
But still, like Storm Skies and Sands.
Garrett Hammond.
Garrett.
I want to make sure I say that night.
Shout out.
Garrett Hammond. Go check out his blog. He's doing some great work out there. And so we're.
And Garrett really did the cover art for which book?
He did that for Sands and Storms.
Okay.
Okay, so what about Skies?
Skies, Jeff did that one.
Okay.
So Jeff
did a great job.
Did a great job.
Matching.
You like it?
Yeah. Okay. So it's beautiful. Uh-huh. It's gorgeous, but it also matches.
It matches, right? Yeah. Which is key.
Yeah.
And exactly. If you've ever wondered what Jeff looks like, he's the guy on the cover. That's actually him. Oh. So on the cover of Skies, or I'm sorry, Storm, or no, Skies.
It's Skies.
Skies, the third one.
It is one. Skies. Yeah.
Uh huh. So
self-portrait.
Yep.
That's cool.
Sometimes, because, you know, we'll do photo shoots.
Uh-huh.
We'll get some costumes. We'll do a photo shoot, and then we'll Photoshop it up to make it really nice and, you know, have this certain stylized feel and
we'll
put the flecks
fun.
Of sand in there. And so, yeah, Jeff did a really phenomenal job.
That's
on that
great.
One.
Very cool. Very cool. So I want to talk a little bit about Future House Labs. This is kind of a different direction for you guys. How did you come to this idea? What does Future House Labs do? And
okay, this
what's
is
the deal, man?
All right.
Well, there's a need. It's like we should start with the need.
There's a huge need. What we found is that we have thousands of manuscripts come through our doors into our slush pile, and it was a bit overwhelming. First of all, to pick out the gems and to read through them all in the first place. So what we found is that a lot of authors have brilliant ideas, but they need a little bit more help with nailing the genre or figuring out exactly what their book is and where to sell it.
Which is critical.
It's very critical.
It's critical.
Readers have an interesting behavior, and we've discovered this by experimenting, you know, in all sorts of different ways, but we found that always the books that sell are books that people can look at and say, I know what kind of book that is before I pick it up. And what I mean by that is, if you have a book that you nail it and it's a sci-fi book and it's got a spaceship on the cover and you know that it's going to be a galactic empire or space colonization, space exploration novel, then you know what that is and you want to get it because there's people who just read those and they read one after another after another. I know when I see the cover of Sands that it is an epic fantasy novel. And there is this heroine on the front with a spear and fire coming out of her hands. And I know that's a fantasy novel. Same thing with Got Luck. There's the hero on the front with this glowing fireball hands. And I know that that's an urban fantasy detective novel. And there are readers who just look for those kinds of things and they understand it. We've put out other books that we liked it and the author had great writing and it was a good story, but it didn't really fit in any genre. And so nobody was able to look at that and go, I know what this is. I want to spend, you know, several hours of my life reading it.
Right. And you get just a few seconds.
You get just a few seconds.
You get a spine.
You get a
and
spine.
Then a cover. And then maybe they'll open it up and read a couple lines.
If you're lucky.
If you've captured them with the cover and the title.
And that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
So the reason, so we've thought, well, we've got all these editors who know how to do this. And with all of the work that goes into production and marketing and everything, we are putting out about 12 to 25 books a year. But sometimes we have extra time that our editors could edit more books. And we thought, okay, what if we open this up and allow people access to hire our editors in order to prep their book for either self-publishing, taking it on submission to other places, hybrid publishing, whatever they would like to do with that manuscript, but get some guidance and polish beforehand.
Elevate the quality.
Elevate the quality.
You know?
Give yourself a better chance. So what we're offering is having those editors look over your manuscript, consult with you on where it should be positioning itself on the shelf. Is this young adult? Is it middle grade? Is it science fiction, fantasy? We found that we get so many submissions where people say, oh, it's young adult, where it's really middle grade, or it's middle grade,
right,
where it's really young adult,
right,
or they're trying to squeeze this urban fantasy feel when it's not quite that, or there's not enough romance in their story. There's certain elements that a lot of people are missing that are basically the key indicators to a reader. This is the kind of book I want to read. This is the kind of book that I understand. And so nailing the genre is a big part of it and having a story that really works.
When I got your email where you were outlining and this and this and this and this, I about fell off my chair because it was just, this is so needed. because so much of a book's success is nailing the genre, having that product, because it is a product, be well edited, you know, from a developmental point of view, and then the, you know, a deep line edit where you're looking at the pacing and the voice, all the way down to the copy editing, you know, it's, I just think this is just, I'm so excited.
Well, and what an opportunity too, because anybody can hang out a shingle and say, oh, I'm an editor, but you guys have the experience of been there, done that, and you know how to edit and produce a book of high quality that's award-winning and best-selling, and you know, now you're opening up your services to everyone, and it's just, what a phenomenal opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I think it is because, you know, we've got editors like Emma Hogan, who is our managing editor.
Yeah.
And she's been to your conferences before. And
yeah.
Emma's so great because now she's been with Future House for a number of years. And so she's seen every book that we've done that has succeeded and every book that we've done that has failed. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I feel like we have a lot of great successes, but we have actual data to show which ones sell better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it's the ones that fail that you learn from.
We learn so much from the ones that fail.
Yeah.
And we don't want an author to put their book into that failure place if, with some tweaking, that could be a huge success. Mm-hmm. So why not take some of that? You know, it's almost like we're pulling back the curtain and we're allowing, you know, someone to step inside the publishing company and see how it works and get that advice to prepare their manuscript for whatever they
want to do. I think that's great.
It.
Yeah, because writers, they don't see the other side of it, you know, and often will even get offended or, you know,
butt
hurt.
I get phone calls all the time from writers asking for advice, and I tell them, you know, what I think their book needs. And that's sometimes really hard to grasp, that your book as your baby is not quite targeted to what you need. And so if you're open to that feedback and you want somebody to give you their take on it, I think there's, you know, we're opening that up for that opportunity.
I think it's so great.
And so how do we find that?
So you can find that in the show notes. There'll be a link there to the website in Future House Publishing where you can read about the packages and the services that we have. And then you can connect when you log on there and connect with an editor, you can purchase the services.
Cool. Cool. So you talked a little bit about what's next for you. But what else is coming up? Evertaster's been optioned for a movie.
That's right.
And is there anything moving? I know that process takes forever. Is there anything moving on that?
It takes forever. You know, I will be the first to admit that once you get optioned for a film, that's just step one in the process. So the Evertaster story was optioned by Orson Scott Card and Peter Johnson of Tailswapper Entertainment. And so they've done some development on it. And I'm so excited about it. I've done some visual development as well.
Oh, cool. So you've got your hands in it.
So I've got my hands in it. You know, Peter's been so great allowing, you know, calling me up. Hey, what do you think about this in the story? And he doesn't have to do that.
No, he doesn't. That's really great.
You know, and so it's really nice. But I would like to see this get made. And so I want to assist without meddling. So I had, you know, they wrote a script. He hired somebody to write a script. And then also I've done some visual development. You know, we gathered some artists like Garrett Hammond, who did a phenomenal job. And we, you know, they did some concept design of what these characters could look like and what some of the settings could look like. And as we take that around and pitch that to executives, we can show them, hey, this is what the film could look like. And it gets their imagination going. And it helps them to understand the world that they could immerse themselves in.
So is it being touted as an animated flick or a live action?
You know, it could go either way.
Okay.
You see things like Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children, which was live action. And I think that worked. So Evertaster could fall in there as well. Or it could be pushed more towards Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you really push the animation, you stylize it. And there are things in there that work for that. You know, there's giant magical chickens, and there are these gorillas that kidnap the kids. There are some scenes, hilarious scenes with Vikings and their pet cows and the way they behave really lend themselves toward animation. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if I could vote, I would say let's do animation. But
I was wondering if your background kind of gave you that,
right,
that bent. But yeah, definitely.
It does. I mean, in my mind, you know, middle grade does really work well for animation in a lot of ways because it's just an imaginative world. And I love animated films.
Yeah.
So I could definitely see that and would like to see that. But that's part of the development process where for film, you've got to decide, okay, the same thing with books. You've got to decide where is that target and what do people want to see? What have they wanted to see in the past? And how can we replicate that success while still adding our twist of creativity to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a definite formula. Disney's got it figured out. And, you know, definitely the whole aside there. So I think if you fall in that formula, you're going to be doing just fine.
We could do all right.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is creative types. We hate that word formula.
I know.
We hate that word formula because, you know, my book is so new and so different and it's not like anything that's ever been written before. And as soon as somebody says that, we put on the brakes.
Yeah, because it's not going to be marketable.
Right. Because I salute everyone who writes that different book. I know my first book that has never seen the light of day was different. It was like nothing ever anybody had ever read before. But that's why it also never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
Is because I didn't know what the genre was and I didn't know what that formula was. So we talk a lot in Future House about being 90% the same and 10% different.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's good. That's it. You know, you listen to pop music. Mm-hmm. And if you just kind of turn on the radio for a minute, it all sounds the same. But then you get into the nuances of it, and there's definitely differences. But it's all pop music. You know, you're not going to throw a country music song in there with a banjo just out of random, you know, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all.
Because you're not going to reinvent the human being. We like story structure. Yeah. Human beings, we want to have catharsis. We need to have those moments where our heart is racing. And then it's like, okay, reprieve. We've got to have that. We like threes. There are things that human beings just like. And so if you're going to write something completely different, you got to reinvent the human being.
So let's go back to this pop music analogy. Let's take Taylor Swift's latest hit, right? Mm-hmm. It's obviously very popular today, but let's imagine that we had a time machine and we were going to take that back to Mozart's time and play that for everybody. What would their reaction be?
Oh, yeah.
They would hate it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they just wouldn't comprehend it.
Yeah.
Right.
They would have no idea what was going on. So it's not saying that that thing in itself is not creative and amazing and beautiful.
Right.
But as a writer, you could write that and then bury it in a time capsule and hope that in 100 years someone can discover it and appreciate that. Or you can write something to your audience that exists today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we rewatched Alien a couple nights ago and, you know, made in 1979 and absolutely brilliant storytelling, like brilliant. And so brilliant storytelling would never work today. Audiences today would not flock to theaters to see that because of the pacing.
What
pacing
triggered us rewatching the original Aliens was we went and saw Alien Covenant.
Right.
And it fell flat on its face far as I'm concerned.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's getting great reviews. Okay. But I'm like, meh.
Yeah, I was
kind of. You didn't like it.
I didn't connect with the characters.
There was something off.
I mean, it was a good show.
But here's what I know about it, actually, they did a lot in character development that ended up on the cutting room floor. Mm-hmm. But audiences are fine with it. I don't know where it's ranking.
Was it in favor of visual effects?
I would say.
Because I'll say that. As a VFX artist, someone whose bread and butter has been making those visual effects, a lot of times story gets sacrificed for visual effects. And I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
But I think that you can have a story like Transformers that lands the special effects and lands the story. Do you know you can have both?
You can, and you should. Know? I mean, that's what made Star Wars, A New Hope, so great.
Yeah,
is that people were amazed by these visual effects, but that story is almost perfect.
Yeah,
it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say Aliens is perfect for 1979.
Yeah,
19, maybe 2004, but about there, that's where we stopped.
But the thing that we noticed,
we had to be entertained visually.
Kind of more. Talk about the point that we were talking about is that it was a lot slower than things are today. Uh-huh. And I don't know if audiences will tolerate that, the slow pacing that exists in the original Alien.
So here's the point, is that you have to be interested in the genre, but you also have to be writing for what audiences are interested in at the time. Yes. As well.
Mm-hmm. And it does change. It does change.
And if you want to know where to put that, go find a category on Amazon mm-hmm. that fits the mm-hmm. closest to your book possible. Maybe find two or three.
Yeah.
And then look at the top 100 books mm-hmm. in those categories yep. and decide if yours looks like it would fit in with the rest mm-hmm. of them. And once somebody reads it, they'll find out how unique and creative and cool exactly. your story is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But from the appearance from the outside, before they know your story, is that reader going to look at that and say, wow, this is one of these stories that I love. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a chance on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's one yep. of the things that I think is, just to mention talking with editors, is getting that chance to talk with them in 5 or 10 minutes. They're going to be able to help you to know.
Oh, yeah.
Where your book should be
yeah.
targeted.
Yeah.
Or if it's already targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is 90% of sales. Well, so Adam, thank you so much for being with us today. Where can we get more of you, more of Future House Publishing?
Go to futurehousepublishing.com and you'll see a button right on the front page that allows you to sign up and get a free ebook sent directly to your inbox. And this book is Future Worlds. It's a very cool anthology.
Yeah, I have it.
You have it? Oh, uh-huh. Good.
We have
good.
It.
Oh, yeah.
We have
it's
it.
Got a number of our authors in there, each writing science fiction stories. Mm-hmm. There's some great work in there by Cameron Dayton and Josie Russell, who's also a phenomenal writer and mm-hmm. one of our top sellers. And you'll get to read some of their work and find out more about them and take a chance on their work, you know, for nothing. You can also sign up for the email list to find out when we have frequent deals mm-hmm. on our books mm-hmm. and find out about new releases, and then find out about the authors as we write a little bit about who they are mm-hmm. and what books are coming out. So you can be on there and never miss a new release.
Oh, very excellent. Cool. Excellent. Yeah, that's a great idea.
And then you can find Future House on Twitter, mm-hmm. you know, and
we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Come say hi to us there. Mm-hmm. Write us a message and somebody will respond.
Awesome.
Yeah, and browse around and see what books we've got and if that's what you like to read and also close to what you like to write.
Yeah. Well, Adam, you are certainly an asset to the publishing community, and I want to thank you for all of your hard work and for your inspiration. You are awesome, man. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Michael. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thanks for being here.
It's so good to finally be here and be on the show. And I appreciate both of you and everything you're doing to help bring authors closer towards their dreams.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.